This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, family, to Brother from Another. If you're watching on Peacock TV, thank you very much. Good to have you. If you're listening on Sirius XM Channel 85, enjoy the fastest hour in radio, TV, podcasting, streaming, whatever you want to label this platform, it's all good. And if you're watching on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcast, we appreciate you. I've got so many things I want to talk to our guests about today. We'll talk with Jarrett Bell, longtime great NFL writer for USA Today. I want to ask him, why a 64-yard field goal for the win, Denver? What are you doing? I want to ask Jarrett that. I want to ask Ashley Nicole Moss how she's feeling after some tremendous confidence pregame, before Cowboys Buccaneers. And I want to talk to Charles Robinson about all things going around the NFL, including some of these superhuman players who think that, oh, an injury is for other people. For me, it's just a minor roadblock. Before we get to that, though, I want to ask a question to the NBA. Adam Silver, let me ask you this. I'll be brief here, and we'll talk about this later in the show and later in the week. What do we accomplish? What do we accomplish with Robert Sarver? If you missed the news, Robert Sarver, the owner of the Phoenix Suns, he was under investigation. The NBA had an investigation going since November of 2021. That investigation came to a close. We found out the penalty today, and the penalty is a one-year suspension for Sarver. 1 year, cannot represent the Mercury, the Phoenix Mercury, the WNBA team, cannot represent the Phoenix Suns, the team he has owned for 17 years. And he got a $10 million fine, and $10 million fine is the maximum that can be handed out by the NBA. In addition, Sarver has to go to sensitivity training and talk about workplace behavior. And that's about it. I mean, essentially, that's about it. And that $10 million will go toward organizations that focus on race and gender in the workplace. Now, Sarver, I put it in the feed, NBA sent a message. What message did Sarver receive? The message sent by the NBA was, I guess it's a rebuke, but it could have been stronger. I mean, think about it. 17 years. Okay, they looked into his ownership, and over his and throughout his ownership, one of the things that, and this amused me, funny, not funny at all. One of the things he said is that, hey, he used the N-word at least five times, but when he was restating something he heard somebody else say. I'm not saying this. I'm just telling you what somebody else said. Hey, I think this word is offensive and repulsive, but they said it. So let me just repeat what they said, even though I don't agree with it. Anyway, that was in the report. You can check it out. It's available online. So he used the N-word at least five times. He was a disaster as a, my words, not the official words of the report. He was a disaster when it came to, just keeping his composure in the workplace. He made inappropriate comments about people's appearance, particularly women. He made sexual comments in the workplace. That was him. And shockingly, the NBA, and this is so naive, the NBA says, now he never, that there was no evidence that he, in particular, had any kind of racial issues with him in the workplace. However, the report, this is in their report, the report says that other people in the organization had issues with keeping their composure in the workplace, making inappropriate comments, sound familiar? Making inappropriate comments to women, and at times making racially insensitive remarks and culturally insensitive remarks. So yes, Sarver, they didn't get him on it, but this is the environment that he has fostered. This is what his organization is known for. And you know what happens? You know what happens? Organizations tend to reflect their leadership. So maybe they weren't able to get him on it. I'm skeptical. I'll say it that way. I'm skeptical. If everybody else in the organization is doing it and they had evidence that they were doing it, but they couldn't get the boss on it, wow, what a coincidence. And last thing I say before we talk about something much more positive, and I talked to somebody I really enjoy speaking with, and Jarrett Bell, I'll say this. Let me ask you guys this question. Have you ever been to sensitivity training with people who don't believe they should be in sensitivity training? I have. I don't know what your experience is. My experience is those people who have been called into sensitivity training because they need it, but don't believe they should be there, they're hostile. They're hostile. And they will talk as if they are being victimized, as if the world is against them and they are in the right and everybody else is wrong. So I don't know what sensitivity training is going to do for Robert Sarver. A $10 million fine for a guy who has owned the Phoenix Suns, a very lucrative organization, who's owned them for 17 years, $10 million fine. I understand that's the maximum. I'm guessing he's not going to be hurting for long. We've been waiting for the results of this organization, for this investigation. And I say, wow, what were we waiting for? What did we accomplish? A lot more on this story. But as I said, let's talk about something more positive and a person who's a lot more positive. Let's talk to Jarrett Bell. I love talking to Jarrett Bell. Love talking to Jarrett. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, Michael. How you doing? It's good to see you, man. As we kick off yet another NFL of a season.
Yeah, good to see you too. And I want to ask you what you were thinking last night when you saw a rookie head coach kind of watch the clock just wind down. So, okay, what's going to happen? You got Russell Wilson. It's fourth down. You got to let Russell Wilson do something. Clock is winding down. And then we get down to our decision is to kick a 64-yard field goal to win the game. What were your thoughts then?
It looks like it might be the bonehead move of the week because it didn't work, obviously. But you let the clock run down all the way to like 20 seconds before you stop it, okay? That's why you've got Russell Wilson, is to make those plays. I mean, he's in his old house. I would just imagine that all of the synergy is just surrounding Russell in that moment. You don't have to get a 15-yard completion. You need to just get 4 or 5 yards, and then you still have all of your timeouts. You can still kick that field goal, make it closer for McManus, as good as he is. It just really stunk, to tell you the truth. And, you know, Nathaniel Hackett, his first NFL game as a head coach, right? And he's the only new head coach who lost over the weekend, and that's the way you go down.
Well, he deserved it. You know, well, hey, listen, if you're going to do that, he deserved to lose.
Totally.
With that decision.
And you remember what Bill Parcells used to say, you are what your record says you are. So this is on Nathaniel Hackett's record, because you take the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands in that moment. It's beyond me. It really is. I'm dumbfounded. Don't know what they were thinking. And even, like I said, the clock management leading up to the kick was atrocious. So Nathaniel Hackett, he tried to explain it in the post-game news conference. I wasn't very convinced by it. So there you are. You're 0-1 as a new coach. And these are the decisions that win or lose games.
So if you look at this, you know, the Broncos had several opportunities. It did come down to this. It shouldn't have come down to it. They had their way at a lot of times just moving the ball. You look at the yardage they finished with after the game compared to Seattle's. They had ease. They were moving the ball up and down the field with ease until they got to the red zone, and specifically until they got inside the 10, and in some cases inside the 3 and 2, and then they just fell apart. Do you think that Denver is who Denver showed itself to be last night, and do you think the Seattle is Seattle who showed itself, looked like a decent team last night? Do you think both of these teams are what they looked like last night?
Well, I see the potential in both. I mean, I see the potential in the Denver Broncos. And, yeah, you lose. They had a stat where it's happened, like, only once in the last, like, 30, 40 years where somebody has fumbled inside the 5 twice or whatever. So you don't expect that to happen every week. So good sign for Denver to be able to move the ball, and you kind of see what Russell Wilson brings to that whole equation. But I'm more impressed with Seattle and Geno Smith, okay? Because Geno Smith has been written off for years. Here's a guy who has been in the system playing backup behind Russell Wilson for, what, 3-4 years or whatever, and now he gets his opportunity, and he didn't mess it up. I mean, he didn't put up monster numbers, but he made some heck of a plays. He didn't make any bad mistakes. So, you know, Geno Smith and the Seahawks really showed me something that you're talking about a team, if they could – you know, have that running game. Remember, that offensive line has been such a problem in Seattle for many years, really. And, you know, they came to ball last night. The defensive line was pretty good, too. And so if I'm the Seattle Seahawks and the 12s up there, I'm really excited that, you know, we've got a chance to, you know, to really be competitive this year. It's one game, one week, we know it. But, you know, we saw something in Geno Smith and the Seahawks last night, because they still have some of those same playmakers, DK Metcalf and, Tyler Lockett. So you've got that to work with. And then Geno was just working with those tight ends last night. Like, it was, pretty connected, pretty special. So, I'm bullish on the Seahawks, at least after one week.
Well, if you look at it, you know, you look at the completion percentage for both of them, you know, great night. Geno, 82%. Yeah. But Russell at times, and they said it during the broadcast, I think Troy Aikman probably made the point like a half dozen times. He said, I'm really stunned that Russell hasn't been able to take advantage of some of the youth in the Seattle secondary. He got some young corners. Why isn't he testing these guys? What do you think it was? Do you give credit to Seattle and Pete Carroll and his defensive staff? Or was the Denver approach a little too conservative unnecessarily?
Yeah, it may have been a little too conservative, especially when you look at how it ended, right? So you've got Russell Wilson. You made this huge investment to get him. And, hey, we heard it for how many years, Michael? Let Russell cook, right? Well, that chant may move on to Denver now because, you know, like you said, there were opportunities that seemed to be there. But still in all, you go back to the turnovers in terms of, you know, what really lost the game besides that end of the game fiasco. You know, they had their opportunity. So again, I don't know if you want to overreact and say that, Russell is not going to be able to take advantage of all the weapons of the weapons that he has there. It's just, you got to close the deal when you have to. And that's where they really failed last night.
I'm going to get you. I had your colleague, Mike Jones, on yesterday and last week. And I know he's very excited. He was excited about the Bills as AFC East champions. He doesn't have the Bills winning the Super Bowl. How about you? I mean, everybody loves the Buffalo Bills. I have not heard this much love for Buffalo from NFL writers like you to Vegas. Everybody is hot on the Buffalo Bills. How about you? Who's your team to watch this year?
Yeah, I like Buffalo from the standpoint that we've seen them develop over a couple, 3 years, right? And they just keep adding pieces and gaining confidence, right? And so you bring Von Miller to the defense, which was a really good number one ranked defense, and you've got to be better. What a statement they made on Thursday night against the Rams. But here's my caution about Buffalo. You are still going to have to beat Kansas City, and there's always going to be another team. Yes. I look at the Baltimore Ravens and I think they are sneaky dangerous. Now, the Ravens lost a playoff game at Buffalo year before last, right? And so now you've got to maybe do that again if you're Buffalo, beat them again. So it's way too early just to really stamp anybody as a Super Bowl contender. But for 1 week, for all that they did in the offseason, for how they've built over the past couple of years, yeah, they're going to be in that mix. We know that. What a great statement for them in week one. But it's just too early to really kind of crown a Super Bowl champ right now. But they will be. But you know they're going to be three or four teams, right? And right. Buffalo's one. I think Tennessee showed us again that they are a fraud, right? And so let's you know.
Strong words, a fraud.
Yeah,
huh?
Well, when you're talking about a Super Bowl level, I mean, they had their opportunity last year. But I think Kansas City really showed us something without Tyreek Hill. And, yeah, how do you take Tyreek Hill out of, you know, an explosive offense and expect to still be good? Well, you have other playmakers step up. You still have Patrick Mahomes. Now he has more options, different things he can do so he can expand the offense in different ways. And, you never want to say take Tyreek Hill out of it and you're going to just be okay. But that's kind of the challenge for the Kansas City Chiefs is to really keep that offense moving without Tyreek Hill. And so I think Kansas City is still going to be that team that Buffalo is going to have to prove that it could beat. Now, they almost did it last year, but, you know, we'll see.
You know, Jared, you mentioned Baltimore, and it brings to mind the Lamar Jackson contract negotiations. And I've always said this to people. Look, I would not be I'm in this business, the sports journalism business, for a reason, but it's not the business side of it. I'm not really a business minded person. I'd do okay with it, but I would not excel at business. I don't believe that. So, and part of the reason, Jared, I've done some self-scouting on this. I'm too idealistic. So if I'm representing myself and I'm dealing with an organization like the Baltimore Ravens, I'm representing myself and they say they love me. I love them. Oh yeah. We want to be here together and we'll get this done. I'm thinking that my conversations with them are private or confidential. I haven't leaked a thing. I'm just talking to them. And all of a sudden, before the season starts, we said, we're suspending our talks and we'll get this thing worked out. Okay, that's nice and beautiful, nice little family business. All of a sudden, I hear that the terms are out there for people like you and me to discuss and that, you know, sources say that the Ravens offered Lamar $250 million and $133 million guaranteed, but he wanted a Deshaun Watson contract. Could this be a deal breaker? Because I know if it were me, I'd be like, what? I would take it personally. It's not just business. Now it's personal because you positioned it as this personal family thing, and then you go behind my back and leak a story. Am I all wet on this? How do you see it?
No, I think that's a wonderful point, Mike. I really do. I think it's, you know, it's very relevant in the grand scheme of things because for so long we have not heard details come out in terms of the specifics of what was being discussed between Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. And like you said, now all of a sudden you're hearing these terms and you know they didn't come from Lamar Jackson. So you look at the team, you point the finger there. It helps his leverage, to tell you the truth, that if you know, from the standpoint that he's going to want to play hardball. Go back to last spring when Deshaun Watson got his contract, right? And everybody was just really stunned by not only the number, but the fact that it was guaranteed, right? Well, the Ravens owner, Steve Bisciotti, came out at that time at the NFL meetings and said, no way are we going to, you know, want to put that kind of guarantee on any contract. And it kind of messes up the whole deal. Now, I'm paraphrasing exactly what he said, but that was the tone of his remarks. And I think that has been the crux of the issue. Even though they guaranteed a significant portion, it still wasn't 100% guaranteed. And I think this is really going to be a measuring stick in terms of how some of these contracts get done in the NFL moving forward. I mean, we've heard players talk about wanting guaranteed contracts, and especially the star players, right? For so long, Kirk Cousins got it. Now Deshaun Watson gets it. Some of the other big contracts, Russell Wilson being one of them, did not rise to the 100% guaranteed level. Well, that's what Lamar wants. And from everything that I could tell, right?
Right, that's right.
And so it's definitely going to be the line in the sand that either gets resolved next year. They'll put the franchise tag on him, I'm assuming, unless he gets hurt, right? We saw what happened with Dak Prescott a couple years ago. He got hurt. The Cowboys still negotiated with him as if he didn't get hurt. But that doesn't mean the Baltimore Ravens will do the same thing if something happens to Lamar Jackson. So obviously, and he knows this, there's this risk that he has by not having a deal right now. But he's sticking to his principles. And I, for the life of me, Michael, I think if he had an agent, it would definitely help in terms of him being able to not be in the middle of it, to allow someone else to do that talking for him. But, Lamar beats to his own tune sometimes, and you can't knock him for his principles. So, this is going to go on. But the point you make about where the information came from in this case, because now all of a sudden it really looks like, you know, the Ravens are playing a PR game. They want to justify why their quarterback is not done. They want to get public sentiment on their side. And yeah, I think it is wrong when you talk about kind of how this whole thing has kind of transpired over, you know, many months, with both sides really keeping to the vest when it came to confidentiality. And now all of a sudden stuff is getting out there. Yeah. Not right. Not good.
Well, speaking of confidentiality, and this is the last thing I'll say before I let you go, confidentiality went out the window at the beginning of the pandemic 2020, because we had Zoom and we could kind of peek into people's workspaces and homes. And I'm peeking into your workspace right now. And I'm so nostalgic. I see an old school USA Today paper box. I love that. How long have you had that? That thing is fantastic. Great job.
Thanks, Michael. And it is a conversation piece. It's funny because I've had it for about 5 years, and USA Today offered them to the employees a few years ago after they got new boxes, you know, a few years ago. And so, I grabbed one. It was definitely one that I wanted to have, but it was sitting in the garage for a long time. And I'll tell you, I showed it to Pam Oliver when I moved here to Atlanta last year, and she just thought it was like the great, it was in my garage, and I showed her some pictures or whatever. And she was like, oh no, that is just classic. You've got to have that. And so that's where the idea came to kind of put it in my office here. Was from Pam saying, yeah, you've got to have some, you know, some decor and, you know, some nostalgia going on. So that is, it just served its purpose again to be a conversation piece. You know, USA Today's 40th anniversary, Michael, is on September 15th. It's coming up later on this week. And so, you know, and I've been at USA Today, not for the whole 40, but I got there the first year it made a profit, right? So I think there may have been something, something to that.
There it is. But coincidence? Coincidence? Not at all.
Yeah, maybe. But point being, you know, very proud to be associated with that brand for so many years. And so, as this anniversary approaches, I've kind of reflected a little bit on that. But I'm glad you noticed the box,
because of course
you can't find them on the news corners, on the street corners anymore.
Hey, man, that's a piece of Americana, man. You better hold on to that. Hold on to that and keep that secure at all times. Jarrett Bell, always good to see you. Always good to hear you. We'll talk with you again, I'm sure, before this season ends. And lots of other storylines develop. Thanks for taking the time, man.
Yeah, there's always something, right?
That's right.
I appreciate you having me, man.
Anytime.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
I saw this on Instagram, and I said, wow, what confidence. What confidence. Ashley Nicole Moss rocking the number 4 Dak Prescott jersey. And it's just like, oh, yeah, we're the Cowboys. And then we have this. I'm not laughing at the injury. I'm just laughing at the reaction. The reaction from ultimate Cowboys fan, commentator, observer, Ashley Nicole Moss. So I look at you, and it doesn't look like you've been crying. It doesn't look like you've had any sleepless nights. How are you processing and dealing with the loss of your quarterback?
It's not great. It's so funny, that Instagram picture, because last season I posted a picture before week one, or before the game started week one, and we played the Bucks last year as well, which is a different conversation, and we ended up losing. And it was an Ezekiel Elliott jersey last season, and somebody photoshopped an L instead of a 21 on the jersey, and a photo went viral.
That's right.
And here I am again, the same team, same situation, except a lot worse. It's gut-wrenching. It's disappointing. It's devastating, not even just as a fan, but Dak Prescott. I mean, it's so hard to root against him. Everything that he's persevered through, he's the nicest guy. He's so polite, so charismatic. Even if you're not a Cowboys fan, it's hard to dislike him. So it sucks to just see him have to fight back from another injury. And I think that when you're a Cowboys fan, obviously it hurts even more because you were already apprehensive going into the season, right? You were already apprehensive going into this game because we look drastically different offensively than we did last year. So you held out hope, but you were also expecting for the worst. But this, I think, exceeded everybody's, you know, preparation for the worst. This is just a very, very bad situation.
All right, and you mentioned last year, and first of all, that game last year, I remember it vividly, and there was a point in the game, I said, well,
we were close.
Oh, I know. Not only that, I think there was a situation, maybe it was maybe it's not so vivid. I don't remember it vividly. I know it was fourth down, and I thought the Cowboys should have gone for it. They kicked the field goal instead.
Yes.
Tom Brady gets the ball. They come down and they lose. I'm like, wait a minute. If you're going to play against Tom Brady, you're going to have to go for touchdowns. Go for it on fourth down. They were moving the ball. Like, Dak was incredible in that game. What did he throw
incredible.
For, like, 400 yards?
And that was his first game back from injury. And it's such a weird, poetic, you know, type of storyline that now he's facing that same team that he was this close to beating last season, where he came back from injury, and now he's injured. Now he's facing an injury after facing that same team he almost beat, fresh off of one. You can't make this stuff up. It's insane.
How did you feel about? And I don't think I've really talked to you about this. We just saw the news happen, and we just kept going forward without any commentary. You mentioned last year. Yes, they did have CeeDee Lamb, but they also had Amari Cooper. And when they trade Cooper to the Browns, just like, hey, CeeDee Lamb is ready for the number one spot. I know it's only one game, but did you agree with that decision at the time? And if you did, are you now changing your mind on how you felt about it?
I didn't agree with it at all. Here's the thing. If you're going to go ahead and trade a wide receiver at the caliber of Amari Cooper, then your game plan should be to be able to bring somebody in who's of that same caliber. It's one thing if you don't feel like he fits in your scheme and you want a different receiver of that same standard, but you didn't really get any better at the receiving core. You just move a guy who honestly is not ready to be your number one option yet into that number one option, but everybody surrounding him is not better than what you lost. So I just didn't understand the rationale. Obviously, Gallup is not back yet. He's expected to be back week 4, week 5. That's still not enough. And then on top of that, with all the veteran receivers that are out there that you can get for the vet minimum, Jerry Jones not going after one of them is just an asinine decision to me. I don't understand the rationale. I don't understand the blueprint. You have Odell Beckham. You have Antonio Brown. You have some other guys out there. That's not going to cost you like an exorbitant amount of money. Like I said, you can sign them for the vet minimum, but it's going to make a drastic difference in your offense because what happened, and I tweeted this a few weeks ago before the season even started, what's going to happen with not getting a veteran receiver is exactly what ended up happening. CeeDee Lamb got locked up every single time. You know, Dak had the ball in his hand. The offensive line is not good enough to protect Dak long enough for him to get a pass off. Even if he could get a pass off, if your number one option isn't available, you can't really trust the other guys. They're just not there yet. So he's scrambling on every play. You have to exhaust your run game. That's eventually going to go ahead and become weary and not work throughout four quarters of football. Anybody could see the writing on the wall if you've been watching football longer than a year.
Well, listen, I'm not even a Cowboys fan, Ashley. And I told Michael Smith yesterday, I said, well, you know, given the division that they play in and given the talent that's on the roster, I still think they have a talented roster. They could have a winning record or a 500 record without Dak. And that's a non-Cowboys fan saying that. And you sound like you disagree with me. I'm listening to you, and I'm ready to say they can't win. Pack it up. Season's over. That's what it sounds like you're saying.
Anything is possible in the NFC East. We call it the NFL's reality show, right? You can never really count out anything being a possibility in the NFC East. But here's my issue. If I had the offense that I had last season with my backup quarterback of Cooper Rush, I would say absolutely, because the defense is good enough to keep you in every single game. But the offense, I mean, Cooper Rush is not a miracle worker. If Dak Prescott couldn't go ahead and score more than 3 points with this offense, what makes you think your backup quarterback is going to be
tough
any
defense,
more successful
Bucks.
In doing that?
The
it's
Bucks,
just the weapons aren't there.
Tough opponent. Tough opponent, too. Now, you got to keep that in mind. They played at now with a defensive-minded head coach. Think about it. Last year, Bruce Arians, you know, no risket, no biscuit. They're not really a defensive-minded coach, a team, starting with the head coach. They are now with Todd Bowles. Excuse me. I think it's just a different vibe with Tampa. It's not going to be tough sledding like this every week for the Cowboys.
I mean, you'll have some games, especially those, you know, division games that are going to be a little bit easier because the Giants, you know, are not the best team. They're going through a lot of changes. The Commanders, you know, also going through a lot of changes. Philly looks good, but they did go ahead and give up a substantial lead against the Detroit Lions in week one. So again, anything is possible in the NFC East, but you have to also look at some of the other opponents. You're looking at the Packers, the Vikings, I mean, the Titans, you can't really sleep on them. The Lions seem to be able to fight back and put up a fight. You know, you have Justin Fields and the Bears. You have the Rams. I mean, there are winnable games within the schedule.
Yes.
And especially winnable games before Dak Prescott would be able to return. It's just a matter of the schemes that you put your backup quarterback in for him to be successful, because unless you're going to go out and get the offensive weapons that they drastically need, you know, you're going to be in the same predicament, maybe even worse with your backup quarterback. But here's my, you know, my other side of that. It's great. So let's say you go 500. Dak Prescott comes back to what? The same offense that he struggled with in week one? The team needs to be adjusted.
If you go 500 and he comes back to that offense is good enough then. Okay, we went 500 without you, Dak, and you are an elite quarterback. So you take us, your backup was able to take us here, so you take us a bit further.
Well, I mean, not every single game you're playing Tom Brady, though. Let's go ahead and put that out there. And Brady didn't look his best. But you're not playing the Bucs every single week. So if they are able to go 500, and I really don't think that's a possibility. I don't think they're going 500 before Dak Prescott comes back. I think if Dak comes back, he's going to have to dig them out of a semi-deep hole. I just don't. My concern is him coming back to a situation that's the same. Now, if they go out in the next few weeks and get a veteran wide receiver and some O-linemen that are kind of floating around and go ahead and help make this offense winnable to a degree, then yeah, when Dak gets back, he's going to be in a great situation. But if it's the exact same team, I don't know how you fix that. I mean, I see people talking about get Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is not God. He's not a miracle worker. He can't even make this offense, you know, go ahead and turn that into something. You have to look at what he came out of from the 49ers. That's a drastically well-constructed offense where he literally only has to do just enough to go ahead and help them win. He gets to Dallas, he's going to have to do a lot more than just enough. That's how badly constructed this offense is.
Ashley, we know you're a strong follower of the NBA as well. NBA stories, you know, all over the league. And I think we talked to you about this when the investigation first launched last November with Robert Sarver, the owner of the Phoenix Suns. We got the results of that investigation today. Sarver was fined $10 million. That's the maximum an owner can be fined. And he is suspended from league activity for 1 year. I said off the top, what did we really accomplish with this investigation?
Right.
Because and the penalty, because we learned all the things that Sarver's organization has been known for in the last 17 years, not the last 2 years, the last 17. And this is what the NBA comes up with. And he comes out in a statement, Sarver says, well, although I disagree with, some of the conclusions of the NBA, I will follow. I will take responsibility. No, if you disagree with it, you're not taking responsibility. You're not being accountable. What did you think when you saw this news break today?
It's interesting, especially given that this happened within the NBA, right? We always talk about how the NBA is so progressive and they're so ahead of the curve and things that may, you know, be okay in other sports, specifically the NFL, when we make that comparison, would never fly in the NBA. And then something like this happens and you kind of look at it like this goes against everything that the NBA claims that they stand for, that this league stands for, of what's allowed, what's not allowed. And it makes you wonder why. Why did it take so long? And with all of the records that you have going years back, this is not a one-year situation. I remember when the situation happened with the Dallas Mavericks and Mark Cuban, where he was accused of, you know, some unfavorable workplace conduct. They did a full investigation, and that was only for a short window of time. This is almost two decades worth of accusations of just terrible workplace conduct and then some, and that's the best that you can come back with. It's odd coming from the NBA. If this was the NFL, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be like, well, you know, that's the nature of the NFL. They kind of turn the other cheek and anything to, you know, put football first. And, you know, that's not that surprising. But it definitely raises a couple of eyebrows and makes you look at the NBA a little bit sideways. And then when a statement like that comes out, it just goes to show that, you know, a lot of owners feel like they're Teflon, and situations like this make you realize that they feel like that because a lot of them are.
Because they are. You know, they looked at a lot of documents. They looked at a lot of emails. They talked to human resources. And Ashley, this is the one that just really got my attention. The investigation found that many employees didn't have allies, or they didn't have any confidentiality. They didn't have any rest when they went to human resources. So in other words, if you work for the Phoenix Suns and you see something that goes wrong, or you've been victimized by this horrible workplace culture, you can't go to human resources. One, human resources is not going to do anything. And two, right, human resources maybe is not going to keep your complaint, your legitimate
anonymous
complaint, private.
Right.
Like, what? So that's on Sarver. All this stuff is on Sarver. They also said something in the report of, hey, Sarver himself never was racially insensitive. However, other people in his organization were. Well,
I mean,
that's
they
the
say
environment
you, what's yeah. Right, what's that saying?
He fostered that environment, right?
Right. You know, as an owner, they said that's saying you are who you hang out with. But taking it even, you know, further, when you're an owner, when you're a CEO, when you're a president, you are a reflection of the people who work for you. So if they're working for you and you're hiring these people, one can go ahead and then conclude that they share similar mindsets, they share similar thought processes, they share similar beliefs and foundations and moral compasses. So while your hands may be quote unquote clean when it comes to actually doing the dirty work, it's really not, because you are the sole person who's responsible for bringing these people in and also letting these people go when they don't adhere to the narrative or the foundation in which you want to run your organization. So I don't, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like, that's kind that's of right. Like ordering a hit on somebody and saying, oh, well, I didn't pull the trigger. Yeah, but you ordered the hit. So, I mean, you know what I mean? You're just as responsible. Yeah, your hands are clean with gunpowder, but you go ahead and you ask them to do it. That doesn't mean anything to me. And it's definitely, again, it goes back to, with all the information, with all the reports, with all the paperwork from years and years and years, that this was the ruling that the NBA came down with, is definitely disappointing, because this goes against everything that this league claims and proclaims rather to be.
Yep. Surprising and disappointing from the NBA, but you are not disappointing. Never. Ashley Nicole Moss, always great talking with you and hanging out. You know what? You need to have more confidence in the Cowboys. You need to be like me and have confidence in the Dallas Cowboys. I hope you will learn from my lesson and my vision when it comes to the professional football team in Dallas. They're going to be all right. They'll be all right.
Listen, your lips to God's ears.
All right.
You did see Jalen Warren in his first game action. Just what did you like about him, and is he ready for an expanded role if he has to take one?
You know, he didn't urinate down his leg, man. That's a great place to begin. You know, and that's capable of happening for a young guy. And so, but I think that's been indicative of him throughout this process. And that's why he's gone from being an undrafted guy to a guy that's carving a role out for himself.
Hey, listen, man. Look, Charles Robinson, I always tell people, hey, just give me Mike Tomlin press conferences. And like, if there's a little bit of a lull, just put on a Mike Tomlin press conference and I'm good to go. Now, that was entertaining. I'm not sure he's entertained by what's happening with his best defensive player, though. Do you see any scenario in which Pittsburgh continues this high defensive play without T.J. Watt for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks?
I mean, it's going to be extremely difficult. There's a reason why you're talking about him as the reigning defensive player of the year, and it's not just the fact that he rolled up, you know, massive sack total last year, but he's probably as close as you can get to Aaron Donald. There are maybe three or four guys in the league defensively where really the scheme is ultimately built around what they can do. And he's one of those guys that they can move him around to help confuse opposing offenses. He's never out of a play. I think if you watch that game, it was terrible to see him go out, particularly after the interception. Like, he's one of these players that if he's not getting involved from a pass rush perspective, to see him jump up, time that, you know, intercept the football, forces fumbles. I mean, he literally does almost everything an edge defender could. So to take him out of the mix, I mean, that's pretty difficult for the Steelers. But that said, I tell people this every season, and this season in particular, Mike Tomlin has a huge hurdle in front of him from a coaching perspective, particularly considering what's going on at the quarterback position. And yet every single season, Mike Tomlin seems to show up, coach the Steelers well. There's a reason why he has no losing record on his resume. And I think if you go back and look at that game, it's another example of, you know, Mike Tomlin and a Steelers defense showing up when people, I think, expected this to be a down year for Pittsburgh.
Now, I know every player in the NFL has the right to get a second, third, fourth opinion if they want to, especially a second opinion from what the team doctor is saying. So I get it for T.J. Watt. But if you're the Steelers, are you discouraging him? I mean, you got this guy signed to a long-term deal,
yeah,
torn pectoral muscle. I'm going to discourage you from like trying to go out and play. We need you, but we need you long-term too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it gets a little dicey when, you know, it's part of the struggle that you see between, you know, teams and players, and it can go in both directions. We often hear fallout from players feeling like, well, maybe the team physicians or the doctors or the trainers push me back too early. This is the flip side of that, where you have players who want to keep themselves on the field. And as you said, will seek second or third medical opinions. And I think when you get onto the third opinion, that's when the team steps in and says, okay, like, how long are we going to push this before, you know, you finally listen? I think they'll be careful with it. I just, as you said, they know, just like the Rams know with Aaron Donald, just like, let's say, the Browns know with Myles Garrett, the teams are going to handle their superstars, despite the fact that they're paying these guys $20 to $25 million a year, $27 million a year for the best edge defenders now, $30 million a year for the best defensive player in football now. They're going to play it safe because they know the window is open as long as those players are healthy and on the field, and Watt falls into that category where the Steelers ultimately are thinking long term. They're not going to sacrifice him for a 2022 that in effect is sort of a pivot year for them anyway, not only at the quarterback position, but they have other positions on the field that they're still trying to sort out and figure out where they're going in the future, even defensively.
You know, Mike Tomlin in that great clip talked about a player not urinating down his leg. Did Nathaniel Hackett do that last night in Seattle? I'm still trying to figure out what happened there. Yeah. What'd you see?
I think it's surprising. You know, I know that he said, hey, we got into the range we wanted to with a 64-yard field goal. That's where we felt comfortable. I think I'm of the mind that when you go out and you get a Russell Wilson, I know it's 4th and 5, but in that scenario, when you look at the percentages, that's the thing. I think the team did look at the percentages. I think the team thought a 64-yard field goal is potentially a higher percentage play in this moment. But I just disagree when the player you're comparing it to is the quarterback that you just brought in to be your centerpiece, to make plays. I would not have taken it out of Russell Wilson's hands at that point. And frankly, I think it's a far more defensible position for Nathaniel Hackett afterward when he says, look, we went out and we got this guy to be our centerpiece. We're always going to lean on him. It's like, you know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, they're going to have their ball. They're going to have the ball in their hands when it matters in the closing seconds. And if they miss a shot, guess what? They're going to get the opportunity again the next time that happens. Russell Wilson, to me, is that kind of a player. That's what you brought him in to be. And yeah, so I'm not a big fan of taking it out of his hands. And, you know, he's getting criticized right now, I think rightfully. And we'll see if he learns from it.
I want to get your sustainability polls. Who's leading the sustainability polls of surprising 1-0 teams, whether it's Chicago at 1-0, Minnesota at 1-0, the Cleveland Browns
right
at 1-0, Seattle. Like, is there anybody who's the Giants, anybody you look at and say, wait a minute, ooh,
yeah,
I didn't have them really doing that well, but now look at them.
I would say this. First off, a thing that I think I'm now learning about game one since COVID is we went through COVID and all these teams stopped, just said effectively 95% of our starters were really not going to play in the preseason. We're not going to put them out there. We'll practice, we'll have joint practices, but we're not going to worry about exposing guys in games to potential injury. I think we are seeing the effect. I'll put it to you this way. I believe week one less than ever before, because I think that I see a number of teams out here. I just don't believe what I'm seeing. I'm like, I'll give you the example, the Rams. I don't think the Rams are necessarily that team. The Bengals, I don't think Joe Burrow is necessarily that player in week one. I think it's because you have teams that are saying, we're not playing any of our guys. And if that means we go through week one kind of figuring out a little bit, maybe 2 weeks figuring out a little bit on Sundays, we'll deal with that. So I think you're seeing performances, subpar performances from some teams that I don't necessarily believe. Now, the flip side of that, in terms of sustainability, I like Minnesota. I think that I thought Minnesota was one of those teams where when I went through Minnesota's camp, I looked at what Kevin O'Connell wants to do there in terms of the play calling. He has a great roster, particularly offensively, Kirk Cousins, for as much as we beat up Kirk Cousins, he is someone who could be very, particularly in the regular season, very proficient passer. Justin Jefferson thinks he's the best wide receiver in the game. I think you're going to have a hard time denying that this season. And so when I looked at the Vikings going through, I thought, hey, this team's got a chance to be better maybe than people think. And for it to be real and tangible, what I thought was really fun to watch was Kevin O'Connell didn't show anything offensively in the preseason, nothing at all. And then as soon as we see him play against the Packers, you got, Jefferson going in motion. You have some of the play action stuff. I saw a lot of pieces of the Rams offense instantaneously. And what I thought in my mind was, that's the Kevin O'Connell that Sean McVay was upset to lose. That's the play caller. That's the guy who would have been the OC for the Rams this year, dialing everything up offensively. He's just doing it for Minnesota. And I thought he did it really well. I think what we saw from Minnesota against Green Bay was actually real. I think Minnesota is going to be a better team than maybe people thought.
Can't wait to see it. Charles, I can't wait to speak with you again. Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll talk with you soon.
So happy to have the regular season started again. We are back.
Me too.
I'm so excited.
Me too. There's so much to talk about, man. And happy to have a one-on-one conversation too.
Yes, it's nice. It's an A to B conversation. It's nice every once in a while.
Every once in a while.
Song. I am a woman, I am an artist, and I know where my voice belongs. I mean,
that's awesome. That is awesome. Cheryl Lee Ralph winning an Emmy last night for work on Abbott Elementary. And in the story there, look, as you know, as you can hear, she's got a Broadway background, great voice. But she's been in the game for a long time. She is in her mid-60s, and she never thought she was going to achieve this moment. She got there. She was shocked. And she celebrated in song, just a great moment and an inspiring moment too. She was trying to encourage others to not give up on their dreams. All right, enjoy spending time with you. See you tomorrow.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.